Welcome to the latest episode of the IDEA podcast from the Irish Development Education Association. I'm your host, Eimear Green, and today's episode features the keynote speech from our virtual conference, Rising to the Challenge, Global Citizenship in 2020. This was given by Philip Alston. Philip is a professor of law at New York University, and from 2014 to 2020, he was UN Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights. He was also chair of the UN Committee on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights from 1991 to 1998, and UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Executions from 2004 to 2010. In his speech, Philip gives us an overview of the issues that have been in spotlight in 2020 through the frame of human rights and inequality. I hope you enjoy.
I will talk briefly about some of the issues that are raised in the report, but then I want to turn to the challenges. And I think the main theme of my comments today is that it's increasingly up to us, in the sense that I think a lot of work in the development field, and particularly development education over the decades, has tended to focus elsewhere. Our government needs to do more. The World Bank needs to do more. We need to give some money. We need to create awareness in others, etc. But I think what's happening now means that we have to look much more directly into the mirror and ask what it is that we are doing and what we should be doing if there's going to be a way out of the crisis that is surrounding us right now. So the report that I wrote for the UN, which came out in July, I suppose, was written, I actually started writing it in March, and I still remember vividly. There's about a page on COVID-19 at the beginning of the report, and that was the time when the panic around the pandemic was at its height, when we all suddenly woke up and realized this is for real and it's very serious and threatening. And I remember spending weeks sitting here trying to wrap my head around how the COVID-19 implications had changed the broader equation that we were looking at. In other words, those of us who had spent so much time thinking, well, it's SDGs, and it's the range of issues that we're familiar with. And suddenly, not only did some of the issues change, but every one of the component parts began to look quite different. So I could talk endlessly about how they've changed, but that's not the point. If we take something like gender equality, there's a very long-running struggle to try to promote more equality. The SDGs include an important goal in that direction, but suddenly COVID transformed even that goal, where women were hit from every direction in the sense that they were the first to be laid off because they're not in the most protected jobs. Often their qualifications are lower, but they were also absolutely in the front line in responding to the virus because they were the ones who were often deemed essential workers. They were the ones who then had to go home and look after the family that was increasingly threatened, the parents who were at high risk. And in so many, and their own careers, if they were more middle class, were radically impacted by having children running around at home while they were trying desperately to continue working. And so even an issue where we thought we knew the contours of both the challenge and what needed to be done was suddenly transformed by COVID. So very briefly, the starting point of my report is simply to say that There is a lot of self-congratulatory material around the SDGs and around poverty eradication that we've done an incredibly good job over the last 30 years. The implication is that the policies of neoliberalism have obviously succeeded because so many people have been lifted out of poverty. But the problem with that narrative, and this is not at all a radical proposition, it's not something that I've discovered. All I'm trying to do is to actually put it into public debate, is that all of these figures are based on the World Bank's international poverty line. You will have heard of what used to be a dollar a day and is now $1.90 a day. And what we are taught is that if we can get people in every country around the world to have at least $1.90 a day, they will be able to rise out of poverty. Now, the reality is that this $1.90 a day is actually what I call a figure that barely assures miserable subsistence. Anyone who is on $1.90 a day is living a miserable life in the vast majority of cases. And so the World Bank, for example, acknowledges this and says, yes, and that's why we have several other lines. Some of them are quite complex, but all of those lines deliver a bottom line that tells us that there are not only 700 million people living in poverty, there are some 2 billion or more living in poverty. And that suddenly changes things because, first of all, if we've gone through a period of record economic growth, Wall Street indicators at their highest ever, stock markets around the world doing incredibly well, including in Ireland, and massive increases in wealth for a significant group in all countries. And yet, even under the highly optimistic and quite unrealistic figures, there are still 700 million people living in extreme poverty. In fact, the reality is it's much closer to 2 billion people. And so we need to stop relying on that indicator. We need to acknowledge that the progress that has been made is deeply disappointing. More importantly, when we look at the new challenges, which I'll talk about in a moment, people like the UN Secretary General and most governments around the world say, oh dear, the only way forward is to double down on our emphasis on the Sustainable Development Goals. Now, I'm not here to tell you that the SDGs are not important. The SDGs in their own time and on their own terms were a great breakthrough. I was involved in the early days of drafting. I was involved quite a lot in the previous goals, the Millennium Development Goals. I know this process well. And clearly to have acknowledged so many really important issues in the SDGs, to have set goals, to have got governments to focus on that, it's a really big achievement. But to be saying now, the main challenge that we're facing is the need to get back to the SDGs is wrong unless we start to understand the SDGs quite differently. So there are a number of areas that I would pick out. First of all, the latest report that I've seen from a Washington think tank is that the MDGs are currently on target to be achieved by 2092. And this is a highly reputable group that put out a very lengthy report last week. In other words, we are so far behind on the SDGs that it's going very badly. Certainly when it comes to poverty, the World Bank, the UN all acknowledge no chance of meeting the poverty elimination goal, even though the threshold is the misleading World Bank international poverty line. If we go to inequality, the SDGs talk about inequality, but in fact, they are not contemplating any form of redistribution. They are contemplating more growth, which will then be distributed. The reality, of course, we know is that inequality is skyrocketing. It's illustrated by the multi-billionaires in our society, but it's a deeper phenomenon. I heard someone on the radio last night in the US saying that his business had never, ever been better. And he is a seller of $30,000 watches. And he simply said, look, the rich have done well out of this. They haven't been hit at all. My business is absolutely thriving. Inequality is not effectively addressed by the SDGs. I've already mentioned gender equality. Again, the sort of analyses that have been done show that if we're interested in economic equality for women, it's coming. It's just going to be another century or so. In other words, it's going disastrously. Finally, there is the fact that the SDGs are premised on high growth rates. That's how we're going to achieve development for people around the world. Leaving aside the setbacks to growth that have come from COVID-19, the problem is that these high growth rates are fossil fuel driven growth rates. That's what is envisaged. The SDGs mention climate change, but they go into no detail at all. And basically, the essential thrust of the SDGs is not such as to lead us to conclude that we must tackle head-on the challenge of climate change. That the plans that were revealed earlier this week by ExxonMobil, for example, to hugely increase their emissions in the years ahead. That is pretty typical of what a lot of governments are banking on. They are not contemplating serious cutbacks. And the hit to growth caused by climate change, which is unimpeded, unobstructed, is going to be enormous. So to be pursuing the SDGs based on the old notion of growth is just counterproductive. We need to start imagining growth in a very different way. It can't be the sort of traditional model. It needs to be genuinely sustainable. And most of the time when the word sustainable is used in the SDG context, it has very little meaning. It certainly doesn't mean comprehensively revised ways of doing things which contribute to a better environment overall and which radically reduce greenhouse gas emissions. To conclude, COVID-19, as I mentioned briefly at the beginning, has of course made things much worse. I got an email this morning just drawing attention to the fact that something like 80% of kids in the Philippines are in public schools. Those public schools have now been closed for months, and there's no prospect of them being opened. Who do you think's in public schools? Kids who are less well off. How are they going to be set back? They don't have digital facilities at home. They don't have teachers who are going into the studio at the school and broadcasting to them. They don't have Zoom sessions that are making up for anything much. The setback is going to be immense. COVID-19 has really transformed the prospects. I think in the West, it's epitomized, of course, by the president of the country in which I live, who was quoted this morning as saying, listen, don't let COVID cow you. Don't let it rule your life. Just get on with it. It's not a big deal. And of course, it's not. If you have Walter Reed Memorial Hospital at your disposal, if you have the latest experimental techniques, if you have doctors around the clock. But the reality is that the world economy is going to be set back very significantly, no matter how well Wall Street and the other stock markets do. When we add to that climate change, the impact on the poor is going to be absolutely devastating. Climate change, I've talked about it in terms of climate apartheid, because again, the wealthy will be able to escape. They will be able to move house, move jobs, move everything, and protect themselves. The average person will have none of those options. They will be in the path of extreme weather. That giant wave that is about to engulf Frank is symbolic of what is what lies ahead for a great many people. Severe weather events leading to massive flooding, leading to the sort of wildfires that we've seen in California, in Australia, and elsewhere. So I know that I could be accused of a litany of grief here. I think the bottom line is that 2020 really is a fundamental turning point for all of us. I've been working on development issues for 50 years now, and we have never had a conjunction of factors that are this dramatic. I think it then comes back to us, because the solutions, we know that in climate change, for example, I followed very closely the Friends of the Irish Environment case in the Irish Supreme Court. The Supreme Court sent back the National Mitigation Plan, which has to be revised. The new coalition is committed to doing more. But the Supreme Court didn't take climate change seriously. The Supreme Court avoided every opportunity to take up the deeper challenges, and they passed on them. All of us are going to have to start taking climate change much more seriously. And that's not just in terms of, well, let's not use so much plastic and let's eat less meat. It's more than that. That's not going to bring the change that is required. It can be an important impetus, but we have to change governmental policies, that they have to change at the highest level. Priorities have to be adapted, growth has to be redefined, and yet in most of our countries, things are simply going ahead as usual. We're going to have to engage much more in tax justice debates. Tax justice is in the NGO area thriving in Ireland, but the basic model on which Ireland exists is, I hope, unsustainable, because it is an absolutely key part of a global approach which enables massive tax avoidance by the richest corporations on earth, and which then deprives governments all around the world of the resources that they will need to provide the basic social protections. And I guess my final point is, we have to acknowledge that COVID-19 is not just a setback on its own terms. Much more significantly, really, is just what it has exposed. It has exposed that in the United States, for example, There is no access to decent healthcare for tens of millions of people. COVID hasn't changed that. It's just drawn attention to it. And that is true all around the world. And if we are really going to respond to that, what is needed is going to be a new economic model, moving beyond the old growth models. It's not to say that we are needing to embrace an ascetic lifestyle. It's not necessarily going to impoverish many people who are currently doing well. But there needs to be dramatic change from fossil fuels and associated industries to renewables. There need to be changes in a whole variety of other ways of doing things. And the only way forward, unfortunately, is governmental. You can't have governments that are hands off. They have to be steering this process. To rely on the private sector, which again the SDGs tend to do quite dramatically, is naive. Private sector leaders can be as admirable and altruistic as you would ever hope, but their job is not to replace governments and look after the less well-off. Their job essentially is to make a profit while doing so by causing the least harm. And there is no substitute for governments. So I think we need to really raise awareness on those issues. I haven't talked about the, and I should just mention it, and then perhaps it'll come up in question time, about the challenges of the new anti-racist awareness, which the United States has experienced, and I think has been transported to a lot of other countries around the world, where there is a belated but very welcome recognition that so many of the basic structures that we have, the assumptions that we have long masked racist attitudes, and we haven't addressed the legacy of colonialism in a great many countries around the world. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to check out our website for more. Until the next time.